My special guest in the studio tonight is recognised as one of Australia's most creative and original contemporary pianists. In the jazz and improvised music genres, his talents have contributed to some of the most important ensembles in recent years, including Clarion Fracture Zone, Wonderlust, the Australian Art Orchestra, and of course his own trio. He's been a successful composer for several film scores and has toured internationally to wide acclaim. Alistair Spence, welcome to Now's the Time.
Thanks, Frank. It's great to be here.
Can I start by asking you about your musical background? How did you come to the piano and who were your early influences?
I grew up with a father who played classical piano and a mother who was a book writer, children's book author, and I got into classical piano at age 9. Well, they started me off and actually liked it, which was nice. I quite liked practicing, which was good. You know, I was probably one of the unusual ones of my age. So yeah, I kept on that path till middle, late high school, and then by then I'd been hearing lots of rock and roll on the, you know, on the airwaves, and started buying a few CDs myself. LPs, of course.
Yes.
Yeah, those old things. And sort of drifted away from, well, actually I drifted into writing music. I just used to spend hours just sitting and trying to make up passages on the piano, and my classical teacher sort of threw her hands up in disgust and said, "Oh, well, that's it then for you." And at that stage, I didn't really have a concept of maybe going to jazz education to further my knowledge. I just sort of mucked around on the piano, made up tunes, and I had a band with some mates and so on. We did have some jazz on the turntable. My dad loved Don Burrow's music, so I heard quite a lot of Don's stuff, actually, and really enjoyed that. And the Modern Jazz Quartet, Oscar Peterson, he was a big Oscar Peterson fan, and a little bit of Thelonious Monk. So eventually I kind of figured out, well, actually, if I want to get better at writing and making up my own stuff, I need a background. So I started hunting around for jazz teachers and ended up with Chuck Yates.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so that was a bit of a journey for me because I'm a North Shore boy myself. I grew up in Tarramurra.
Oh, okay.
And then sort of made the trip across the bridge to Chuck's place for lessons. And at that same time, coincidentally, I'd finished tertiary education. I was training as a school teacher, and I decided that actually what I really wanted to do was be a performer, like a jazz composer and pianist, if I could possibly do it, and sort of decided to give myself a bit of a chance. So
was this in the late 70s, 80s?
Yeah, actually it was quite late, because I went through high school, then it was a couple of years before I went into teacher training, and then went overseas for a couple of years. So I didn't actually start at the con till 85. So in fact, I went through with Jonathan and James Greening, and who else was, Adam Armstrong was the year ahead of me, and Peter Dacent, and Dan Barnett was the year after me. And yeah, so
all those likely suspects.
Yeah, that's right, all of them. So yeah, so then came out of that and kind of just went, okay, right, what do you do now? So I started playing with, Doug Parkinson. I kind of thought, well, I've got to earn some money and I'll get whatever gigs I can. And Doug was looking for a keyboard player, and actually it was a great education for me because it was all about playing good time and, you know, playing things properly and being accurate, and it was really good.
Can I ask you specifically about that moment in time when you were studying your classical music, but you started to drift and explore and compose yourself?
Yeah.
Do you recall the moment you came to the realization of improvisation and what it really meant?
Yeah, I mean, when I first thought that I should learn more about it, and I didn't really know that I was calling it improvisation, it was more that I just wanted more tools for composing. I think the composition thing came first for me. It was like, oh, I really like putting this stuff together, you know, I want to do more of this, and I want to know more about how to do that. You know, I actually probably had, because I'd always liked theory, I think I had quite a strong sort of background in that way, but so I didn't really kind of call it improvising, but I was, if you know what I mean. And in our little band that we had, you know, we wrote stuff, but then yeah, we'd improvise. I mean, it was the era in rock music, of course, when, you know, songs went on for, you know, whole sides of albums, and they were just basically a jam on a couple of chords. So I was used to that concept.
Yes.
And I kind of, you know, that was kind of a natural thing to do. But then the kind of whole jazz improvising thing was another bag entirely. After Chuck, I ended up going to Roger Frampton, and you know, it was fantastic. With Roger, it was quite mind-blowing and sort of way ahead of what I had a record collection to support, and it was, I had a lot of catching up to do, but
Yes. When I see, because I've witnessed Roger Frampton on a number of occasions growing up, I guess, and then, into my teens and early 20s. But when I see you perform, I actually see a lot of Roger in your,
okay. Yeah, right.
I guess, just your stage presence and the way you approach the piano.
Yeah, okay.
It's interesting. I'm usually fairly challenged when I try to describe your music, Alistair. Which to me, that's probably a good thing, because it probably means your music is more reliant upon your own artistic creativity than it is maybe on the pantheon of jazz history. How would you describe your music?
It is pretty wide ranging, I think. And yes, it is. I think when I first put a trio together, I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm trying to be in a bubble, but I did decide, yes, I'd like to write and play what I want to write and play. If I'm going to have this band, that's what it's for. And my idols, if you like, the people that I have, grown to admire as musicians and as creators, have all had very strong personalities and have all just pretty much gone about their business of doing their thing. So for me, because I do have a quite a wide range of interests, classical background, love of rock and roll, getting into jazz, film music, ambient, electronica, sort of all been added on sort of as time goes by, plus free improvising and, people like Cecil Taylor, who I have loved for a long time. There's a lot of things to draw together, so
Yes.
it's taking me a while, but I feel like it's starting to, it's starting to have a kind of like some sort of signature sound, even if there's still a fairly wide spectrum of approaches.
When I think of Alistair Spence, I think of Samba Nova. It almost has a persona of being an Australian jazz standard. How does that make you feel, as if some of your compositions are picked up by others and performed?
Yeah, look, it makes you feel great, of course, because it kind of feels useful. It feels like, yes, the work is applicable to other situations and people can kind of appropriate it and kind of make it their own. No, that feels good. Yeah.
It's called Sleep Underwater. You might want to fill us in a little bit about this
Sure.
one.
Okay. I mean, some of my songs have titles, yeah, as you pointed out before about water. This particular one. And usually the titles are to do with the point of origin of the song, not necessarily anything about the song. So this one got started. I was fortunate enough to have a holiday in Rajasthan in India, and we were staying in a hotel, one of those really nice hotels made of concrete to look really old, probably made by the owners. And there was a swimming pool right above our room, and it had a pump, like quite a noisy pump, that got started reasonably early in the morning,
Oh,
and I'd
no.
been drinking too much coffee and had a bit of jet lag, but actually the pump had, and I'd also been listening to this great North Indian drumming, this Gujarat drumming, which I really loved actually. It's a little bit more kind of earthy, I guess, than some of the drumming that I'd heard, other drumming that I heard in India. And so the combination of the pump and the drumming and so on, I ended up with the riff basically that you'll hear on this, the kind of bass riff going around in my head on this tune. So that's where the title came from.
Did you get any sleep?
I woke up too early that particular day.
Alistair, can you describe how the vision for this trio has evolved over the years? Because it has evolved
Yeah,
somewhat,
that's
hasn't it?
true. Yeah, it has. Actually, Peter Reknevsky wrote a review yesterday for a blog, and yeah, he was commenting on that, and it made me think about how things have developed. I mean, when we first the first album we put out, Three as a Circle, he described it as more kind of like a post-bop album, and I guess it had more elements probably of that in it, but it also did have some songs with sampling in it. Sampling technology has been part of our sound, well, since Clarion Fracture Zone, since the very first Clarion Fracture Zone CD actually, when I wrote a song called La Mar Está Enferma, and the melody, the sea is ill, because we did this session, bunch of music called Music for the Southern Seas, and anyway, the melody on that particular track was played by me. I'd recorded a sample of my kitchen wok, and had a nice overtone to it, so that ended up being the melody instrument. So yeah, sampling's always been a part of what I do, but in the trio, the samples are always samples of the trio, always of bass piano and drums and or glockenspiel. And the idea is that it's kind of like putting things under a microscope or putting a different lens on a different part of the sound and just sort of either drawing it up close or making it move away. That, I guess that, that's the way I sort of approach it. But that side of things, I suppose, has become more a part of the music to the extent where now there are songs that are like essentially jazz piano trio compositions where at a certain point in the performance I've got a little MIDI trigger keyboard, I'll introduce samples of ourselves over the top and we sort of create these layers and either the music dissolves into them or yeah, it just kind of heightens the atmosphere, I guess.
The last time I saw the trio perform was the Jazz Groove Summer Festival earlier this year.
Yeah, right.
And it was at 505 and I was with a friend and you'd created an amazing amount of tension and at the end of the performance, myself and my friend, we just stood up immediately and just gave you a wonderful standing ovation. It was a magical performance. What sort of preparation goes into a performance like that?
Right. Yeah, that's an interesting question. Well, you obviously have to do enough practice to make sure that you can pull it off. But I mean, I think probably going back to my background, I'm a big lover of atmosphere and having grown up with, you know, very sort of strong music through, you know, Led Zeppelin and Deep Purple and all those sorts of things, plus, you know, strong classical music and strong jazz music as well. I do love the atmosphere. I love tension. I like building things as well as deconstructing them as well, but so long as we've all got the stamina to build them, we'll kind of build them as far as we can before we know we're going to fall off the rails together, and then we'll hopefully pull the plug right at the right time.
And you're describing it there exactly how it really happens. I mean, your music is wonderful music to be witnessing live. I feel because you can just see it being sort of created in front of you, and it is like that. You're sort of building a stack of cards until the whole thing just sort of starts trickling back down again, but not like the Necks.
No,
I mean the
no.
Necks do that too, but in a very different way.
Yeah, I think they're a bit more refined. I mean, they're kind of within a bit more constrained parameters. You know, they keep a lid on it. Their kind of idea is that the tension is the fact that it actually doesn't go over the top. Whereas for me, sometimes, you know, building kind of beyond is actually, I think, quite a, you know, I actually like that. I'm a bit of a psychedelic band, I think, from the old days.
Let's talk about your collaborators, very long-term collaborators, Lloyd Swanton, the bass player, who is a bass player with the Necks, of course, and Toby Hall on the drums, who I think was with you in Clarion Fracture Zone.
Yeah, yeah. We both were, actually. Lloyd was in that as well. Yeah,
yes, that's right. What characteristics specifically in their playing especially attracts you to them playing?
Right. Well, look, lots, actually. I mean, Lloyd is, well, one of the things he's so good at is his tone is just so terrific. His intonation is terrific. He's got a good sense of pitch, lovely, produces great sound, and he's very supportive. Like he'll always suggest something for you. If you're not sure what you should do, he'll put something there and then you kind of can build on that. And the same with Toby. I mean, Toby's got a terrific energy about him. Like he really gets stuck into the music and he really delivers, you know, more as to his optimum. So that kind of drive and that energy is really important for me in his music. But also with him, he'll always have something to suggest. And I guess maybe that's just a sign that we've been playing together for a long time because we kind of pick up the ball for each other, you know.
Now you clearly have an interest in visual media as well, having worked with film scores the inclusion of a DVD in your last two-disc set. Can you describe how the visual media might complement or add depth to your music and maybe even heighten the experience for the listener?
Yeah, to be honest, I think for some people it doesn't. I think they prefer it if it's not there because it's another element that you have to take on board. I've really enjoyed working with the person that provided the DVD, Louise Curram. She works with old projectors, so we've had gigs where she's been on stage with us, and so we've got the sound of these little old projectors clunking along, plus her film sequences. So we're essentially at that point we're a quartet, you know. There's the four of us. So there's her sounds plus her images, and our music. And the theory is that we're kind of all being sympathetic to each other, and the images that she provides are very abstract. So it's like that opens the possibility for the music to kind of inhabit the film and vice versa, I hope. Yeah.
Yes,
So
and colourful.
yes, that's right. So that's what I think if things are working really well, I think that's what happens. Yeah.
In the last 20 to 30 years, there have been numerous successful piano trios. We're talking, Brad Mehldau, Keith Jarrett, and goes back further. The Bad Plus, you mentioned off air before, Modesky, Martin and Wood, EST,
Yep.
and a whole bunch of other European trios. What is it about the piano, bass, and drum format that makes it such a potent combination for jazz improvised music?
Yeah, right. Well, I can only speak as a piano player, but for me, having all the parts so kind of clearly defined is a wonderful thing. It's quite energizing to write for that because you know that whatever you're going to construct, the elements are all going to be very strong and very clear. It's a bit like writing for like classical composer writing for a string quartet, you know, where you're just down to four instruments and and all your ideas are out there for the whole world to see. So I think there really is that sort of element in a piano trio, and so it becomes a little bit more like equal parts, like we're all in this together. We're all kind of an equal part of this. No one's kind of really leading it as such.
And it especially seems to be popular for the listeners as well. I mean, that
Right.
they, as far as jazz sales are concerned, I mean,
Yeah.
these are the type of trios that seem to be almost outperforming
It's
in those
interesting.
numbers
Yeah, right.
than maybe some of the other bands or horn players or saxophonists.
Right. I don't know why that is. In some cases, maybe it's a sort of a easier to listen to in the sense that it can be appreciated on different levels. It can be appreciated as background music, or it can be appreciated as, foreground. Yeah.
Alistair Spence, what plans do you have in relation to touring in support of this album?
We'd like to go back to Japan. We played Tokyo Jazz Festival some years ago, and that was terrific.
Now, do you like to continue to call your music jazz? I mean, when you go to Europe,
Yeah.
are you naturally
Yeah.
attracted to the jazz festivals, or like the Next, they've sort of moved out of
Right.
that genre?
Yeah. Well, at the moment I'm just playing clubs and they are jazz clubs, but they are some of the clubs like the Vortex, which I'll be playing this next February, is a club that also specializes in open improvising and sort of more crossover or hybrid musics, I suppose. But yeah, look, I think this is a jazz music. I mean, if nothing else, we all have strong jazz backgrounds, and I feel that that's in the music. But then some of these pieces are, card-carrying jazz pieces as well. And then some of them, I guess, are more kind of ambient as well.
It's quite a lengthy track. It's called Threading the Maze.
Well, this was a kind of a tune that was fairly complete by itself, and the introduction in this particular tune is provided by a little music box, which I sourced online. The Glockenspiel and now the music box, I kind of consider as somewhat extensions of the piano, if you like. They're kind of percussive instruments and they reflect something of the nature of the piano. And this particular music box, you can program it, so by punching holes into a bit of cardboard. So I've punched in the sequence that turns up in the piano a little bit later on in the tune.
Alistair Spence, thanks for joining us in the studio tonight.
Yeah, pleasure. Thank you.